Welcome back, everyone. This is Heartland Politics on KBUR AM-FM, Burlington, Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson. And today our topic is going to be the 2016 election. We're going to be looking at it through the lens of a book that came out, one of the best books and explanations of the 2016 race as it concerns Iowa that I've seen. And the best part is it's written by an author from Iowa. He's Andrew Green, a professor of political college at Central I'm sorry, a professor of political science at Central College in Pella, Iowa. And the book is called From the Iowa Caucuses to the White House, Understanding Donald Trump's 2016 Electoral Victory in Iowa. He's here today to go through the book and look ahead to this 2020 race. Andrew, thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
I thought it was a really interesting book, the way you arranged it. And using political science to look at some of the answers that you posed to questions about what happened, but also you have hands-on experts, so to speak. So maybe just lay out for our listeners how you did kind of structure the book to kind of give it both a more empirical but a more on-the-ground type vantage point.
Yeah, absolutely. I really framed the book in this question of how could a swing state like Iowa move so dramatically from Barack Obama winning Iowa with almost 54% of the popular vote in 2008 to Obama winning the state again in 2012 with just under 52% of the vote, to Donald Trump winning the popular vote here in the state of Iowa with the majority of the vote and defeating Hillary Clinton by 9 percentage points. And in doing so, flipping so many of Iowa's counties that had gone for Barack Obama in both 2008 and 2012. Iowa actually had the most what we would call pivot counties in the country in the 2016 election. And so I thought it was a really interesting dynamic, and put the book together to try to answer those questions about, you know, number one, what drove popular support for Donald Trump in 2016, and number two, what drove the dramatic shifts that we saw not only at the county level but at the individual level between 2012 and 2016. By training, I'm a quantitative analyst. I like to use survey data and statistical methods to answer questions and try to solve puzzles. But I thought that in the context of this particular election, it was really important to also collect qualitative data through interviews and surveys of county-level political elites, in an effort to understand what was going on the ground in the state of Iowa during the 2016 campaign, and how not only state political elites were viewing the 16 campaign, but also how county level political officials, party officials were viewing 2016. And so I did a series of interviews with state level political elites, campaign consultants, both Republicans and Democrats, folks who have run statewide campaigns, whether they be for president or for Senate or for governor, two of which were actively involved on each side during the 16 campaign at the presidential level, and then a couple of consultants who had worked other statewide races in other years at other levels. And then I also did a survey of county party officials, both Republicans and Democrats, asking questions about the 16 campaign to collect their insights and their opinions about what was really going on the ground. And that that information, the qualitative data, I used it in a couple of different ways. I used it, number one, to help develop the statistical modeling that came later in the book, but I also used it contextually to help explain what the statistical models revealed and helped to provide some context for those results. And so the second chapter of the book really focuses on a thematic look at what I found in the qualitative data and identified five major themes in the qualitative data. And then the third and fourth chapters focus on county level and individual level statistical models of vote choice and vote shifts between 12 and 16. And then the concluding chapter talks about what we learned about 2016 in Iowa. And then, you know, through the lens of writing the book during the winter and spring of 2019, what we could expect to see in 2020 as we get moved towards the November election this year.
Let's go through some of the major topics. And I've had quite a few guests on my show over the past several years trying to figure this out, what happened and why. And your book really gets into the why, again, very well, I think. Chapter two, you mentioned some of the things that drove this this outcome. You might go several of those that you found, highlight some that maybe you thought surprised you or just any of your other reactions to some of those five factors.
Sure. I think if I were to describe the most surprising finding in the qualitative data, it had to have been the enthusiasm gap between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And some of your listeners are probably thinking, well, duh, we know that that was a big deal. But I say that, not just thinking about the enthusiasm gap between Republican voters and Democratic voters, because that was very visible, in 2016. The fact that Republicans across the state were very enthusiastic about Donald Trump, and were, very, negative and pessimistic about Hillary Clinton. And I think the Trump campaign did a good job of harnessing, that enthusiasm here in the state, to win the state by over 9 points. The real surprise in the qualitative data was the enthusiasm or the lack of enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton amongst Iowa Democrats. That there were a lot of pockets of Democrats in this state that were not very enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton as a candidate. And there are a multitude of reasons or hypotheses, theories about why that is. But at the end of the day, Democrats, were not all that enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton as a candidate. And I think that hurt the Clinton campaign, particularly in some of those rural areas across the state. And so, that probably was one of the biggest surprises, that I found. I went into it assuming that, I would see qualitative evidence supporting this idea that there was a serious enthusiasm gap between Republican voters and Democratic voters about the two candidates, but I didn't foresee the significant differences on the Democratic side about Hillary Clinton.
What are the other? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say one of the other topics in there that I thought was really interesting was how Trump has just turned a lot of the traditional quote rules of politics upside down. His campaign really depended and was really driven by intense feelings at the grassroots level, and as far as organizational differences, it was striking. But yet Trump was still able to win in spite of some organizational weaknesses.
Yeah, if you were to examine and try to predict, if we went back to 2016 and tried to predict the outcome of the election based upon the ground game and organization in the state, I think 9 out of 10 times you would have expected Hillary Clinton to win the state because she had the traditional ground game that you would expect to see in a presidential election. She had hundreds of staffers on the ground here in Iowa that was led by a significant operation at the state level with seasoned campaign operatives who had run campaigns for other candidates and successfully for other candidates. On the Republican side, however, it was not what you would have expected to see in a traditional presidential campaign. The campaign only had, according to data that I found throughout the course of my research and through my interviews, The campaign, the Trump campaign, only had 17 staffers statewide in 2016. Nine of those staffers were located in the campaign's headquarters in Urbandale, which is a suburb of Des Moines. And the rest of those staffers were spread out throughout the state and were responsible for different geographic regions of the state. What really drove support for Trump, as you mentioned, was this grassroots operation. And the RNC and the Trump campaign really did an excellent job harnessing what one of my respondents to the survey said was passionate Iowa Republicans who are better than some of our paid staff at door knocking and GOTV efforts, get out the vote efforts, end quote. It was one of the quotes from one of my respondents I talked about in the book. And so from a organizational perspective, the Trump victory in Iowa wasn't about, his superior organization, but it was about the harnessing of this grassroots support and real passion throughout, the state amongst Republicans and some independents and even some Democrats about the Trump campaign and the thought of a Trump presidency.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on KBUR AM-FM, Burlington, Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Andrew Green, who's a political science professor at Central College in Pella, Iowa. Beautiful Pella, Iowa. If you haven't been there, go. It's a beautiful town and area. And Andrew's the author of a book called From the Iowa Caucuses to the White House, Understanding Donald Trump's 2016 Electoral Victory in Iowa. It's really one of the best, if not the best, explanations of what happened and why. We're going through a little bit. Andrew provided some background on the book and how it's structured, and I wanted to get into some of the specific topics. You got all kinds of theories. I've read them. You've read them. And again, your analysis is based on some scientific data that you've put together, the political science aspect, I guess. What role did I've heard all kinds of explanations that race decided this, feelings on race, feelings on immigration. Others say it was economics, people feeling that the economy was headed in the wrong direction. Touch on some of these specific topics and what you found as far as what the real reasons that you found were that drove this significant outcome, and the fact that you had quite a few people that, as you mentioned, voted for Barack Obama that voted for Donald Trump, which just seems, when you tell people that, they just say, no way. But, you know, it's true.
Yeah. I utilize a data set called the Cooperative Congressional Election Study, which is a survey of over 60,000 Americans that was done in 2016. And within that that sample of all Americans, there were about 600 Iowans. And so I was able to harness that data, that state subset of the overall CCES, to try and answer questions about what drove support for Donald Trump, what drove or what allows us to predict the likelihood of an Obama or other voter becoming a Trump voter in 2016. And so I utilize that data to construct different models of vote choice and of vote switching in 2016. In terms of overall vote choice amongst white Iowa voters, the significant predictors or the significant factors that led individuals to vote for Donald Trump included being a Republican, a registered Republican, and so this idea that goes back all the way to the American voter back in the 1960s, that partisanship is a significant predictor of vote choice. Republicans in Iowa were far more likely than Democrats and independents of voting for Donald Trump. Additionally, disapproval of President Obama's performance, and so this idea of the change narrative that Hillary Clinton was running for Barack Obama's third term was seen as the quasi-incumbent in 2016. And so for those voters who disapproved of President Obama's performance as president, We're also more likely to support Donald Trump in 2016. And then finally, the final significant predictor of a vote for Donald Trump in the 16 election was holding more hardline views on immigration. And so I included an index of variables that looked at policy positions on immigration, and then created an index that ranged from very pro-immigration at one end of the spectrum to hardline immigration on the other. And for those voters, and this was regardless of party identification, for those voters that held a more hardline position of on immigration, they were much more likely to support Donald Trump here in Iowa in 2016. In fact, if you look at the likelihood, the statistical likelihood of a voter voting for Donald Trump based upon that immigration measure, the overall it goes up by a significant amount as you move from the more pro-immigration to more hardline immigration position on those issue position or on those policy issues.
Interesting.
The other thing I would note is that in the statistical modeling for a vote predicting a vote for Donald Trump, I did include a measure of racial attitudes of Iowa voters, and that racial attitudes measure in the vote choice model actually was not statistically significant. And so what that tells us is that in comparison to some of these other factors, policy positions on immigration, how the voter viewed Barack Obama's performance, that racial attitudes measure had no statistical effect on explaining whether a voter voted for Donald Trump.
It seemed to me, and this is purely anecdotal, but I had spoken with a few women in their 30s who both voted for Obama twice and Trump, and it was just change. And that plays a role here as well. And I think I was surprised to see in your work that the number of people that were not happy with the direction of the economy, I guess, mm-hmm. and that played a role in this as well.
Yeah, the interesting, that's another really interesting, finding in the modeling, because I did include a measure of, the voter's perception about their personal financial condition, in the modeling. And, in the model of all white Iowa voters, that measure actually was not statistically significant in comparison to those other measures in the model. The real interesting finding here is that in the book, I actually disaggregated the modeling by, voters without a college degree and voters with a 4-year college degree. And while the pocketbook measure for, white working class voters, was not a significant predictor of vote choice, of a vote for Donald Trump, for voters with a college degree, it was marginally significant. And what it indicated was that for those white voters with a college degree here in Iowa, the more pessimistic they were about their personal financial condition, the more likely they were to vote for Trump. And I think that in the context of the change narrative, this does make some sense, because if you think about college and educational attainment is in part about putting yourself in a position to maximize your earning potential. And so if you had earned a college degree and yet were very pessimistic about your personal financial condition, it would make sense that those voters would turn to Donald Trump in a change election year.
And the higher education voters were also more hardline on immigration, were they not?
The statistical impact of that variable in the model. I wouldn't say they were more hardline on immigration, but
more
the importance of correct so, yeah. the impact of that measure in predicting a vote for Donald Trump was significantly higher. In fact, it was twice that for those with a college degree versus those who didn't have a college degree. So the, you know, when you were to look at the effect of the respondent's immigration position, the significant impact of moving from pro-immigration to hardline immigration was larger for college-educated whites than it was for non-college-educated whites.
Yeah.
Which, again, is an interesting finding, mm-hmm. Because generally speaking, when we think about those with a college degree versus those that do not have a college degree, you would, at least I would have expected the converse of that.
Me too.
So.
Yeah, that was very interesting. Your final chapter kind of looks at 2020, and since then we've learned some things. I think one of the things that stands out is the antipathy towards Hillary Clinton. Really mm-hmm. Drove the Sanders vote, and with her out of it, he didn't seem to do as well this year. That's one thing perhaps we've learned. But how do you think the race has transpired so far, based on what you knew when you wrote the book?
Well, in the book, and I was writing this chapter late March, early April of last year, so a little about 13 months ago. And as you mentioned, we have learned a few things over the last 13 months about how this race could play out. I think it's very clear that in a two-way race, a lot of the Sanders support in the primary, of 2016, Democratic primary was, it was a binary choice. It was for Hillary or against Hillary. And so as soon as we moved to 2020 and Hillary Clinton's not on the ballot and you have a multitude of options on the Democratic side to choose, Bernie Sanders support regresses back down to, more of a plurality, at least here in Iowa. It was more of a plurality versus a 50-50 proposition like it had been in 16. I think that will play a role in 2020 in terms of how much of Donald Trump's support in 2016 was driven by an antipathy towards Hillary Clinton. Unfortunately, in that CCES, the Cooperative Congressional Election Study data, there really wasn't a proxy for, approval of Hillary Clinton or a favorability rating for Hillary Clinton in the Iowa data that I could have harnessed to try and tease out how important that was to Trump voters. But I think what we could see is we could see that gap narrowing. Because Joe Biden more than likely will be the nominee. And some of those voters who refused to vote for Hillary Clinton, and so they held their nose, proverbially, and voted for Donald Trump, they might come back home to vote for the Democratic nominee. The key question here is how many of those voters are there here in Iowa and across the country? And I don't think anyone has a good understanding of how sizable that group is as of yet.
Got time for just two more questions here. One, I thought one of your really significant findings that I haven't seen this talked about anywhere else is that Donald Trump's strength, of course, people have been talking about the main demographic of white working class voters, which is defined as white non-Hispanics without a college degrees. You actually saw this, an early sign of this, in the Joni Ernst victory to the U.S. Senate in 2014. And, of course, she'll be on the ballot again this year.
Right. There's some really good reporting done. If I remember right, I believe it was by Harry Enten, who started to see these dynamics with white working class voters playing out across the country. And here in the state of Iowa, and it was visible, not only in the 2014 Ernst race, but also going back to the 2012, Obama-Romney race, where you started to see the movement of these white working class, Iowans and Americans, away from the Democratic Party towards the Republican Party. And obviously that played out again, in 2016. We'll see where those voters go. Especially we'll see where those, You know, I've been saying all along that I think in Iowa it's going to be really interesting to see where those Obama-Trump vote switchers go. If they come back to the Democratic Party in 2020 and vote for Joe Biden instead of Donald Trump, that could be a game changer here in the state of Iowa. John Halpin and Rui Teixeira have a really interesting monkey cage blog piece in the Washington Post today. They analyzed some survey data that's been collected over the last couple of months. And in that data, they actually find about 9% of voters or prospective voters in 2020 are saying they're going to be Trump-Biden switchers. And that's a national level indicator, which would be consistent because there was about 9% of Obama-Trump switchers in 2016. Mm-hmm. And so if you start to see a lot of those, you know, what I call Trump switchers in the book, becoming Biden switchers, that could be a game changer, not only here in the state of Iowa, but also in those other battleground states like Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania that were so pivotal in Trump's victory in 2016. Those voters are going to be very interesting to watch. You know, I think the other interesting demographic to watch are these older voters too. You know, older voters, whether you classify older voters as over 45 or over 65, were key voting blocks for Trump, not only here in Iowa, but also nationally. And we've got polling data, here in Iowa, but also national polling data and other battleground state polling data that shows that, Donald Trump's support amongst older Americans is starting to, decline significantly. And so that would certainly be a game changer for the Trump campaign moving forward.
There's a lot of ways to slice and dice the electorate. I mean, we've talked a little bit about white working class, which is based on race, ethnicity, and also education. We've talked about Obama-Trump voters, which are located in different areas. But the last one that I want to address today is the urban-rural split. And sometimes these overlap. You talked in the book about how, you know, the abysmal performance that, Clinton had, in Iowa and across the country, really these key states and rural areas. How do you see that shaping up? Do you think the Democrats are going to have taken measures to do better, or is that vote pretty well locked in for the Republicans and Trump?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And, you know, I concluded the book by talking about the fact that, Democrats in Iowa are going to have to do better in the rural counties if they want to be able to win statewide. You know, the key statistics, at least for the purposes of this book, you know, Barack Obama in 2012 lost the rural vote in Iowa by 6%, but won the state by almost 6%. Hillary Clinton in 2016 lost the rural vote by 30% and lost the state by about 9%. And so, you know, I would argue that Democrats don't need to win rural Iowa in order to win the state's 6 electoral college votes, or even to defeat Joni Ernst in the 2020 race. But they certainly can't get beaten by 30% in rural Iowa and expect to win any office statewide here in the state. And so what the Democrats are going to have to do is they're going to have to put together a message that resonates not only in the urban areas, you know, the Polk County, Story County, Blackhawk County, Scott County, Johnson County, but they're also going to have to put together a message that can resonate in rural Iowa as well. And in 2018, they began to do that, particularly on the issue of healthcare, at the congressional level anyway. They weren't successful in winning back the governorship, but, they did take back two House seats that were previously held by Republicans. And so if they can put together a message that's going to resonate across urban and rural Iowa, and they get that, popular vote differential in the rural areas, even into high single digits, I think Democrats up and down the ballot are going to be very competitive here in the state of Iowa.
Well, we've gone over on our time today, and we still didn't cover everything about this book, but that's fine. I recommend folks go out and buy it. take a look. It's very interesting, not only for looking back, but for looking forward. Again, it's called From the Iowa Caucuses to the White House, Understanding Donald Trump's 2016 Electoral Victory in Iowa. The author has been our guest today, Andrew Green, who's a political science professor at Central College in Pella. Andrew, thank you so much for being our guest, and I'd love to have you back sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.